I get it. It's not real life. It is a production. You know, some press or said and action and all that kind of stuff. But still, the beauty of that is so real. Makes me want to just get my neighbors together and sit on our, you know, somebody's patio and just do it, because it always, you know, looks good. This one girl, one lady takes a whole floor living in isolation, and she gathers them together. She forms community. And how does she do it? Through this image of the table. The table. I want to talk a little bit about the table this morning. You see, the table is much more than just food. Because we think of food, and food can actually just be very, very utilitarian. Can't it? It's very functional. In other words, every human being on the face of this earth physiologically needs food to survive. And so we can think of food as simply as nourishment for our bodies so that we can continue doing what we need to do. Maybe good or bad food. I remember when I got babysat once, I went over to the person's house and she made for all of us kidney soup. Who in their right mind would make kidney soup for a kid? It was like the worst thing. And it's like, how was it? I'm like, really good. It was horrible. Or, you know, something like that. Or you have good food where, like, you go to the Keg, you know, and you have a medium rare baseball sirloin with the Billy Minor pie at the end. You know what I'm talking about? You can think, well, that's just purely functional, right? It's food. We all eat good or bad, but then we continue on with life. But that's not what I'm talking about this morning. This morning I'm talking about the table. There's something very different about the table and the imagery that it represents. You see, the table, just as we watched in the video, it can be a place where stories are shared, where opinions are discussed, and maybe news is gathered. Hey, did you hear about? Or guess what happened today at school? The table is where memories are recounted, especially at places like family reunions or sitting with parents or grandparents. You know, I remember when. And with that comes either laughter or tears. The table is where maybe a romance begins or is celebrated. Regardless of the reasons, the table is meant to be a place of safety, of closeness, of deep relational ties. In other words, the table is the epitome of community. And because of Jesus, the table is meant to be open for everyone. So we've been looking into this series. We're in week 4 of 6 of this series called Life Together, as we've been understanding the incredible and deep importance of this idea of community as we try to become apprentices of Jesus, as we live our way not just admiring Jesus, but actually saying, I want to walk in his footsteps. I want to see the world as he sees it. I want to do what he did. Without community, all of that is so much harder and even possibly impossible. And so that's why we've started with this idea of life together. And we turn to Acts chapter 2 in the last part of that chapter to see this idea of how community actually took shape. And we get this front row seat to how the very first church in the world began. We've been reading this every week, and I want to read it for us this morning. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day, they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Now, we've looked at different elements of this passage in different weeks. We're looking a little bit deeper today in what it means by what they said, this breaking of bread. And as it says it there in a couple of different places in the passage, this breaking of bread, I found out that as the early church, these early Jesus followers got together, you know, does it mean breaking bread? Is that a sign of communion? They always broke bread and had communion together, or was that an actual meal? Well, I found out in the study that it was always included communion, but wasn't exclusive to communion. In other words, they always remembered the Lord's death through the communion time, but they always shared a meal together as well. See, this term breaking of bread is another way, through a picture, of actually looking at it by saying it's not just food that they're consuming to eat, but it's this imagery, this beautiful imagery, is the table, where they would gather together, these early believers, and share life. You see, we aren't the only ones who get what the table means. Our culture today has benefited from this idea well through the years. Louise Fresco, from a publication called The Atlantic, describes the table this way. I love this. She says, each meal is a play where the food is drama, the table is the stage, and the cook is the hero. And I added, or a goat, depending on how the food turned out. But when you think about that, it's almost like it's poetic. It's beautiful. It's so much more than just this utilitarian act, but it's the table. It's this sharing of food, which is a sign of community and intimacy. So we've got the early believers practicing this. You've got people today. This has gone on all throughout the days. I don't even know how you've grown up, but maybe the table has been central in your life, or maybe you wished it was central in your life. As we go back to the early believers, even well before Jesus was born, in the Roman culture and cultures before, but specifically I want to look at the Roman culture, which was the culture of dominance in Jesus' day, the table was centerpiece to people. But there was a lot of differences between the table that they experienced and the table that the early church experienced. You see, people would gather weekly in homes or halls or some other public meeting place in Roman culture. And the word that I think describes it best in how they would experience the table is simply this: indulgence. Because every single time they gathered weekly, it was for two reasons, both centering around this idea of indulgence. First, the food was brought out. And the food, it wasn't, you didn't settle, because these were high-class people, these were dignitaries, these were people of influence, and so the Costco party tray just wouldn't cut it. They brought out everything. They spared no expense, and they ate, and they ate, and they ate. They gorged themselves, indulging themselves for the pleasure of the mouth. Now, who of us hasn't maybe done this, you know, a few times? Especially, I embarrass myself at buffets. Michelle knows this. If you invite me to a wedding and I stay for the buffet, I try not to. I'm getting better, I promise. But I would leave there going, why didn't you stop me before I ate those four extra pieces of roast beef or those three extra pieces of cheesecake? And you know those times when you go home from something and you hurt because you've eaten so much? This was, you know, and those can be one-offs or whatever. But this was the people in Rome every single week. They would eat themselves until they were almost they would eat the food themselves until they were almost sick, because it was the pleasure of the food. Slaves would bring it around, and they would just continually eat and lounge and eat and eat and eat some more. The pleasures of the food stopped nowhere. The second part of the meeting was that the food didn't necessarily go away. There were still appetizers and things around, but the main food would be moved out, and they would have a party. The entertainment would come out. And this was always, again, indulgence. This wasn't like, okay, guys, it's karaoke time, let's turn it on, and who wants to go first? We're talking indulgence. And so if the pleasure of the mouth was central to the eating, the pleasure of the rest of the body was central to their entertainment. They stopped at nothing for their own pleasure. X-rated stuff, for sure. And they would leave these parties both full of food and everything else you can imagine. There was no restraints to satisfying their human desire. That was a Roman table of how it looked. And the biggest thing about this was that not everyone was invited. It was exclusive. You had to be invited by a special invite only. And if you weren't, you were left out. So even, you know, we know the Jewish people were always left out. But even some Romans who weren't as high class or who weren't as well known or maybe were shamed somehow the week before, they were not invited to these parties. And we're left on the outside looking in. We know that feeling, don't we? The exclusion of something going on. Maybe it was even in recess. I remember once, two captains were on the team, and they were choosing each person. And then I was the last one left, and they had an argument over who didn't get me. That was really awesome. You know, and I'm like, somebody please? But you know that feeling of being excluded. Maybe it's to an invite to someone's house that you didn't get and you found out later that other people went. Maybe it's a mom's group that got together and you didn't get that because you found out about it the next week. And you said, hey, I thought I was close to them, and I guess I'm not that close. This is how the people felt who weren't invited to these parties. They were lower class. They were cut off. And they weren't in. But I love what the early church does in Acts chapter 2 when they break bread together. Because they actually redeemed the sense of the table. They took everything that the Romans thought it was about and inverted it, flipped it on its head. So what they would do is when they ate, the food came out. It wasn't lavish. The Costco party tray was okay. Everything came out. But they were mindful of what they ate. Mindful because they knew that there was people on the streets begging for food or going without. And so once they were satisfied, instead of gorging themselves, anything extra would be brought straight out to the streets and shared with people that were in need. And then once that took place in the meal, and often during the meal, again, I can just imagine what was shared, much probably like our day, the sharing of stories of how was your day and what went on, maybe the good news of a baby being born and passing the baby around. It was probably loud, and there was probably kids crying. Maybe an embarrassing story from shopping in the marketplace that day, or just the minutiae of life. And when it came time for the post-meal celebration, after they had given away all their excess of food, they now got together. But instead of like, let's get this party started kind of thing, what they did is they got together and they worshiped Jesus. Remember, they're not so far away from the Holy Spirit coming down and just doing amazing things that they saw. But they spent time in worship together, probably looking much different than today. But they spent time worshiping Jesus. And they spent time in prayer and speaking into one another's lives. And I think in that time, I would guess that this veil between heaven and earth just got a little bit smaller. And in people, they saw the working of God in each other's lives. And so it was not a, I'm going to come in and get something out of this, but it was, I want to come in and what can I give? How can I bless others so that through that I am filled? And here's the biggest thing of all. Through all of that, through the reading of Scripture, through prayer, through laughter, through tears and struggles and all of that, was that the table was for everyone. And they knew this. There was never a closed door to their meetings. There was never a sign that said, you're not invited. Because everyone was. Why? Because they knew that they had something in common. And that was they all understood and experienced this grace of Jesus. And so the poor were invited just as much as the rich. The beautiful were invited just as much as the not so beautiful. The well-built and the terribly out of shape stood and sat side by side. Those who found following Jesus very easy also sat beside those whose life was so changed that it was extremely hard to understand, now I've got to live for Jesus. They sat together. They worshiped Jesus together, and they prayed together. They all understood that they were broken. They all understood they were sinners. And they all understood this great love of God that they had experienced, this grace that they tasted and extended to one another. They didn't need to one-up each other or prove their worth. Their worth was found under the cross of Christ. And so I want to watch one more video before Talu comes up and we close this part of our time together. But I want us to think about this a little bit in how we think about this image of the table. In one sense, maybe we live in an apartment and we say, this week, I want that to happen. But maybe, you know, I think something common in our home is that we all have a table. What does it symbolize for you? Maybe for you and your family, you just need to actually slow down and have a common time where you will actually invest in each other's days and ask. Instead of thinking about it as food that we've got to consume so that we can continue on with life, but we've got to stop and think about our days together. And the table becomes this place of safety and belonging. Maybe it's a place where we invite someone in who we've never invited before, or someone we don't know but that we want to get to know more. Maybe it's a place where struggles and laughter and tears can be shared. And we show grace to one another because of the cross of Christ. Because of the table, everyone is welcome.